From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As the joke goes, someone who speaks three languages is trilingual, someone who speaks two languages is bilingual, and someone who speaks one language is American. While the last census shows more U.S. residents than ever spoke a language other than English at home, most people in this country never master a second language. And with other nations like Australia and Sweden teaching their students second, third, and fourth languages, some say that American competitiveness and our standing in the world is suffering. But between budget constraints and a lack of trained instructors, schools from kindergarten to college are struggling to keep up their standard Spanish and French offerings, let alone other languages. And these days, there may be even more disincentive to learn a foreign tongue. A lot of folks around the world already speak English. Plus, the advent of translator apps on our smartphones might make the whole effort seem unnecessary. Today in The Exchange, does it matter whether we're multilingual? Let's hear from you. Do you speak any languages beyond English? How important do you think it is for Americans to learn other languages? Nice, but not necessary, or very important? Let us know what you think. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests joining us from the D.C. area is Marty Abbott, Executive Director of the American Council on Teaching Foreign Languages, a national organization of language educators. And Marty Abbott, it's great to have you. Thanks a lot for your time.
It's good to be here, Laura.
Also with us from Hanover, Julia Komska, Assistant Professor of German Studies at Dartmouth College. She recently wrote about the monolingual American for the magazine Pacific Standard, and she's working on a children's book that promotes multilingualism. Julia herself is a native of Ukraine, and Julia Komska, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, and Julia, I want to start with you. So why should your average American who just plans to live and work in this country, you know, they're not going to serve in the military, they're not going to work for a multinational corporation or the State Department, why should they bother?
Well, I think the most obvious answer is that by 2050, as some people have calculated, American English or English in general will not be as much of a global language as it is now, and that will be present everywhere and palpable everywhere, and especially palpable on social media and in the news. So the things, the accessible news and other sort of communication channels that we take for granted now will not be so wide open anymore. And then, of course, there is the usual promotion that we've heard over the last several years that learning languages is good for your brain, it's good for your jobs, it helps develop other skills in math and so forth. But I think more than anything, language learning opens unexpected doors. And I think these doors can be opened in this country or they can open up abroad if we do venture out at some point. And there is an element of surprise there, and that's very important.
Well, I'm definitely going to follow up with you on that, Julia. Opens unexpected doors. But what do you think, Marty? Again, you know, if I'm planning to just have a nice, ordinary American life in my small town or city, why do I need to learn a foreign language?
Well, in this day and age, it's just as important to speak other languages here in our country as it is to be able to use them abroad. With our changing demographics, we have needs right here in our own country for people who are multilingual. And the truth is 95% of our customers are actually beyond our borders. So if we do want to do business with the rest of the world, we need to engage with them in their own language and understand their culture. And I think that's increasingly important to keep the U.S. Economically competitive, and we're seeing that. But, you know, it hasn't been our history to know other languages. You know, for years, learning another language in this country was just an academic pursuit. People were trying to fulfill a requirement for admissions or for graduation or for a PhD, and they didn't ever intend to really use the language to communicate. So that's a fundamental change that we need to understand. We are in a different world now, and it's increasingly important that we raise our children to be able to engage with the rest of the world.
Well, and when you talk about we need to, in a business context, we need to engage with them in their own language, our global customers, so to speak. But most of the time, Marty, other folks speak English. So, hey, we're all set, right?
Well, that's debatable. Actually, 75% of the world doesn't speak English. And when they do speak English, it's not at a very high proficiency level. So sometimes we fall into a trap of thinking the rest of the world speaks English and we don't really need to. And the truth is, when we do engage in business abroad, or even here, and people speak other languages, you know, all the business doesn't get done around the business table. A lot of the business gets done in social situations or in the hallways, and you don't speak the language, you're really left out of the conversation.
Yeah, interesting. So if you're at the bar and, you know, two people are chattering away in Spanish and you don't understand, who knows what may be happening there. You know, 75% of the world doesn't speak English. Yule, you wrote a very funny article, actually, about students of yours trying to have an immersion German experience in Germany, but hampered by Germans who wanted to speak English all the time. So I'd love to hear from you on that and Marty's comment that 75% of the world doesn't actually speak English, even though it seems like that when you go abroad.
That's true, and I think that the op-ed actually had two sides to it. The first was that it was extraordinarily difficult to speak English, to speak the target language in many European countries, especially in their cities. I was talking specifically about Germany, but the case is also very similar in a lot of Eastern European cities and in places like Holland, in countries where multilingualism is more of a norm than it is in the U.S. So there are two things. First, it's very difficult to speak the target language. And second is that speaking English, on the other hand, only gets you so far. Because the fact of the matter is that in a lot of these countries where you would think people speak quite a bit of English, their English levels are actually not as high as you assume and as they assume as well. So having an English conversation with them will only get you so far. And I think at that point, not insisting on the fact that you're willing to learn another language and the fact that you're willing to do the ultimate effort to persist with it, that becomes a liability.
Yeah, give us a little more, Yulia, a flavor of what you wrote about in that article. I mean, it was almost funny, really. I mean, here are these kids. They go to Germany. They want to learn German. They're in an immersion experience. And as you just said a moment ago, the Germans keep speaking English to them, sometimes not very well, but just intimidating enough so that the American kids are like, okay, I won't even try.
Yes, and I think that it's also a very kind of metropolitan component to it. So it's a big city thing. There are lots of people. There are lots of tourists. The locals, natives, are quite irritated with the slow speed of how everything's already going. And so they kind of take it out on the tourists by yelling a lot. And it actually happened to me as well, because it was the first time that I was ever traveling abroad. And I've traveled abroad for a while, but not with other English speakers so much. So it was the first time that I've actually been sitting, for instance, in a restaurant in a situation when I've been having conversation in English with my conversation partner, and at a table next door, there was a German couple who was making fun of how Americans behave and how they eat, all along thinking that we're not clued into it. And of course, both me and my conversation partner spoke fluent German, so at some point that necessitated a very uncomfortable moment of turning to them and actually alerting them to the fact that we knew what was going on at the table over there. So I think it's important to not just understand that other people are not necessarily always as embracing of our language learning effort, but also to understand the reasons why they do that.
That's
and
funny.
Their reasons may not necessarily have to do so much with us and how they perceive Americans, but they may also have to do with their own insecurities about how their own politics are going on in this country, how they perceive themselves in the global marketplace. There are a lot of storylines in that big story.
Well, it's interesting, and I have a friend who is quite fluent. She's Caucasian woman, but she's quite fluent in Japanese, and she was in Japan for work, and some men on the street were making some lewd comments about her, assuming she couldn't, and she just let it fly, and she said, I wish you could have seen their faces. So that's a great story. I did want to turn back to you, Marty. You know, the reasons that both of you gave, you know, why study a foreign language. typically in this country, when someone, you know, a kid enters fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, and they start to be introduced to languages, what are the reasons most often cited to study a language? What are we told as kids as to why this might be a good idea?
I think for the most part, in all honesty, kids perceive that there's some kind of requirement. Most people think that 2 years are required to enter college, when in many cases they really aren't. But people think 2 years, oh, that's good for you. Take 2 years of a language. But the truth is, in 2 years, you can't develop a very high level of proficiency. So you really need to start early. We need to start thinking in this country about starting at the elementary school level, where it's much more, kids are much more open to learning languages, and they, you know, that people refer to them as being little sponges, and the
right.
truth is they do pick it up pretty easily, and they're not aware of any, you know, biases about learning languages. So it's an opportune time to begin. But as you said, if students begin at all in this country, because many students graduate from high school with no language study at all, but if they do begin, it begins in the middle school years, which is actually the period where your body starts to, you know, very efficient, starts to actually cut off the abilities to imitate sounds in another language. Doesn't mean you can't learn a language at an later age. We see many people do it. But really, elementary school is where we need to be putting our efforts.
So how often, you don't need to give me specific numbers, Marty, but how often does that happen at the elementary level? I mean, could you say 10% of U.S. districts require it for elementary, 2%, 20%? I don't think very many elementary districts in New Hampshire, for example, require language. I can think of a few, but not many.
I think you're right about that. I don't think there are many districts in New Hampshire that require it, but overall, nationwide, we only have about 25% of our elementary schools right now with language programs. So that's too limited. That's too small. We need to really increase those numbers.
Wow, I'm surprised at that much.
Yes, and we do have some big state initiatives from Utah and Delaware. The governors have devoted a lot of state money to elementary immersion programs in those states, and they're saying we want to raise bilingual citizens that can help bring foreign businesses to our state and can help us do trade abroad. So they're really thinking proactively in the future about what their citizens need.
All right. Well, coming up in just a moment, a lot more conversation on why so many Americans don't speak another language besides English and whether it matters. We'll hear from you, too, in just a moment. Your comments on Facebook or Twitter, or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Let's check in now very quickly with our fall fun drive. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, does it matter whether we're multilingual? Let's hear from you. Did you speak any languages beyond English? How important do you think it is for Americans to learn other languages? Is it nice but not really necessary, or do you think it's very important? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Yulia Komska, assistant professor of German studies at Dartmouth College. She recently wrote about the monolingual American for the magazine Pacific Standard. Also with us, Marty Abbott, executive director of the American Council on Teaching Foreign Languages. And both of you, here's a Facebook comment that came in from Andre, who says, I speak Russian. My parents made me learn as a kid. I appreciate it as an adult now, though. The though makes me think, Yulia, that he didn't appreciate it when he was a kid. Andre, thanks for the Facebook comment. Here's a question that I have for you, Yulia. Different families do it differently. In some families, when the grandma or the parents speak another language, learning that language is required. In other families, not so. You hear a lot of stories from people, for example, who grew up with a French-Canadian grandma or grandpa, and they regret that they didn't learn it more, the home language more. I'd love your thoughts on that, Yulia.
I think it's a fascinating question and a fascinating comment, too, and I think I myself am struggling right now with the same dilemma that Andre grew up with, because I also have two kids who I'm trying to raise bilingual, also in Russian, coincidentally. And I think it goes back to sort of the heritage speaker. Is that the model that we're still going to rely on? What does it take to maintain that model? Does it kind of involve extended families as they used to immigrate in the past? Because I don't think that that's so much the case anymore. I think families are much more fragmented now. I think there are a lot of they're very scattered right now. They're also split. There are a lot of single parents who end up trying to raise bilingual kids. So I think the heritage speaker territory is not quite, doesn't quite pan out the same way it used to be. And also another question along with that is, at what cost do we want to make kids bilingual? And I think there was a fascinating feature in the New Republic, I think, or maybe the Atlantic, recently about written by an Israeli journalist who actually gave up on trying to teach his son Hebrew because at some point their interactions were reduced to some very meaningless bits. So I think it's a question of how do you maintain it? Do you have the resources to maintain it? And also, how does the culture around you, is it receptive to it? Or is speaking another language seen as something very weird? And I think in a lot of cases, the kids perceive it as very strange because a lot of their friends don't necessarily speak another language. And it's also not a normality surrounding them. It's not normality in our books. It's a normality on very few TV shows for kids. I'm thinking Dora the Explorer, Ni Hao Kai Lan. I mean, that's where you hear bits and pieces. But I think that that's sort of the ideal that we should strive toward, having language be less of a compulsion that occurs in the family or in school, and have it be present in all sorts of other venues, in books, in TV shows, on the radio for all it's worth, in the media. I think that's the ideal.
So that's why you're writing that children's book about multilingualism.
That explains part of it, yes.
So real quickly, so it's interesting. You said you can relate to Andre because you're having the same struggle now trying to teach your kids living in Hanover, New Hampshire, Russian. So how do you do it? I mean, how's it going?
It's a pretty tough ride because I think the only reason it works for me is because once every summer they go and visit their grandparents
sure.
who speak German and Russian, but they can only speak Russian is their only shared language. And I think unless one has a daycare where the second language is spoken or third or fourth, or one has grandparents around, or one has a sizable community, which is only really possible in metropolitan areas, it's a very, very tough ride.
Well, Andre, thanks for the Facebook comment. And here's another Facebook comment from Steve. And I think I'll throw this one to you, Marty Abbott. Steve says, I am not fluent in any other languages, much to my regret. In my travels and in my interactions with colleagues, most of their citizens spoke English. I find it extremely egotistical that we feel others should learn and speak our language, but we are not willing to learn theirs. To me, it is yet another example of how America is not willing to join the global community, to respect all people, and to realize that it's in our self-interest to learn as much as we can, including language of our fellow global citizens. Steve, thank you for the comment. Here's my question coming out of that comment, Marty, and I don't want to speak for Steve, but if he were with us on the phone, I would say, hey, Steve, you regret not speaking other languages for all these reasons that you articulate, so why don't you just go out and try and learn one? I wonder if he feels like he's too old, it's too late. What do you think, Marty?
Well, we like to say it's never too late, and we're finding a lot of people, especially in the baby boomer generation, who are just like Steve and either didn't learn a language early on or maybe didn't learn it very well, going back and trying to take classes at their local university or community college or even get a software program that can help them. Or there are plenty of places on the internet where you can actually interact with native speakers of the language. And so we're finding a real trend there in older Americans trying to do this because they're also learning that learning a language at a later age helps you ward off mental deficiencies like dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So we are seeing a real trend in older Americans trying to learn a language.
Well, and speaking of learn, let's talk about that a little bit, Marty. When we say learn another language, does that mean, I have to be completely fluent and conversant and I can hold philosophical discussions in Spanish or Chinese? Or is it still, is it good enough to at least have, basic tourist Spanish? I mean, what do we mean by learn a language? I think some people feel like, well, if I'm not fluent, why bother? I'm just embarrassing myself.
Sure. There are definitely different levels of learning a language. And we like to feel that people can become functional and get along, so to speak, in another language. But then there are certainly professional opportunities if your proficiency level is high enough. And when children start early and have a long sequence of languages and continue in college, they really do come out professionally ready to use it in their job and their career. And that's what we're going to be promoting next year in our National Public Awareness Campaign, is just building that awareness among Americans about how it can help you in your job and your career to get ahead, because we're seeing employers now advertising for multilingual capabilities in the people that they hire.
Sure, but what if I'm not fluent, but, you know, I can sort of get around a country at least? I mean, is that worth it, or does it have to be that sort of high proficiency level where I can use it working for a multinational corporation, Marty?
I think it's definitely worth it to gain that functional ability. What we find, you know, is that when you make an effort and people see Americans at least making an effort, I know Yulia had that experience of the Germans, you know, wanting to use English, and we see that too. But I think that people really do appreciate and are surprised when Americans have made an effort to learn some basic phrases and how to get along, you know, when they're traveling abroad or even interacting with neighbors who speak other languages. I think any effort that people make is appreciated, and then you have a basic proficiency level and you can grow from there.
All right. Well, let's take some calls, both of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And first up is Lucy in Portsmouth. Hi, Lucy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was brought up in English and in French, and I found that when I listened to the radio and I heard Spanish songs, I could understand some of the Spanish, so then I went and learned Spanish. And then first thing I knew, that opened the door to Italian. At this point, there are several Latin languages that I can understand. And some of the, I'm a singer, so I sing in 8 languages, and I also have some German. I find the more languages you learn, the more it opens up others. And if you travel extensively, or if you travel at all, once you can understand their jokes, it's almost like a window that opens to their culture.
That's what Yulia said earlier. It opens unexpected doors. But so let me just sort of poke at you a little bit, Lucy, if I could. You're a singer, so obviously you need to at least learn how to pronounce some of the words. And it's great that you can, you know, understand and speak these Latin languages. But, you know, for a lot of people, it's just not necessary. I just wonder what you think to someone who just kind of has a regular job and is very happy. I know lots of people who only speak English and are very happy and very successful.
Well, you know, I think, I suppose it has a lot to do with your makeup and what interests you, but I think that it does stretch your brain. And also, there is no limit on the age that you can start learning these languages. From my own experience, I would say that it just opens up the world.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Lucy. I appreciate it. And Yulia, quoting you there again, opens unexpected doors. Even if you're, you know, just expecting to be a country veterinarian, or, you know, have some job where you wouldn't think you'd be interacting with a global society. Here's our caller, Lucy, making the case that, yeah, it's useful. What do you think?
Oh, I second Lucy completely. It's actually an amazing story. And I think what surprises me most about Americans being reticent about learning languages and being sort of a little bit self-contained about it is that this country is supposed to be about freedom, right? And what is there any more freedom than speaking other languages and being able to move around in the world or in your own community as well? Because let's face it, as you say, the country doctor example, you never know who your patients are going to be. And you never know what languages they're going to be able to communicate in. And you never know what is going to come out of you making acquaintance with them. So I think that goes along with some of the things that Lucy said and also some of the comments that I've made before about open doors. I mean, there's an element of surprise there, and I think we make language a very academic endeavor and a very professional endeavor and evacuate the element of surprise from it, and I wish we could bring it back.
Let's take another call. This is Mark in Sandown. Hi, Mark. You're on the exchange. Go ahead. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. It's interesting. As a child, I grew up around the world in Brazil, Peru, the Philippines, Denmark, and my first language was Portuguese. Being a blonde-haired American, when we moved back to the States at 5, promptly forgot all the Portuguese, learned English, then moved to Peru, learned Spanish, was fluent in it, and that has been slipping away just from a lack of use.
Sure. So you used to speak Spanish and Portuguese, Mark.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I could still speak Spanish, you know, if I got into an environment, but my daily life, there's no, you know, opportunities. I'd really have to work hard to speak that Spanish.
Right, and you're busy doing other things, and, you know, it's...
Yeah. The other interesting thing is my daughter lives in Copenhagen. She's been taking Danish lessons for 4 years, and we go over there quite a bit and have a lot of Danish friends that just slip in and out of English so naturally. And when you try to use the best of your Danish, everybody answers in English.
Yeah.
And in the work environment, you know, a lot of the business is done in English because often they might have a Norwegian, a Dane, a German, an Austrian, an American, like my daughter. And then English is the language.
It's the common language of business,
yeah.
Sure. Mark, great comments. And I think let's take the first one first, and then we have to go to a break. What do you think, Marty? No opportunity to practice. I mean, he might have kept up his language skills, but there's just no one to practice with.
Well, as I said before, the Internet offers a lot of opportunities. There are companies now that actually set up interactions with native speakers, but almost every community has a Hispanic population these days, so sometimes you have to make an effort to put yourself in an environment where you can use the language, and that may be helpful. And it's, you know, we like to say it's like riding a bike. Once he's back in that immersive environment, I'm sure it would all come back to him.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for calling in. And after a short break, we'll take more of your questions and comments. You can join us. How important is it for Americans to be multilingual? Is it nice but not necessary, or is it very important? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to check in now with our fall membership drive. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the changing debate around climate change. You can join us with your thoughts before the program on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. This hour on The Exchange, why so few Americans speak another language besides English, and whether it really matters. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email again is exchange at nhpr.org. And Yulia Komska, Marty Abbott, let's go right back to our listeners. Robert's calling from Manchester. Hi, Robert. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. I'm happy to be here. And I'd like to say that I teach conversational French at St. Anselm College, but on Mondays and Fridays, I'm at home with my two grandchildren, age 3.5 and 2. And I speak only French with them. And my wife and I raised our son to speak French. So he is 32 years old. He's perfectly fluent in French and English. So he's raising his children in French. And I think language is a gift. It's something that if you have it, give it, pass it on. It's free. It's no effort. You just do it. And that's it.
Well, Robert, I'd love to ask you a question about that, because I've heard from so many people of French Canadian background here in New Hampshire the opposite story, that French was spoken at home, but, you know, not encouraged among the younger generations. Assimilate. So there's a lot of families that have the opposite story from you. And I wonder what you think about the pressures that they felt they faced.
Oh, I think, you're absolutely right. They were told that, but there were also families like mine. My grandfather came here from Canada, and he was a French language journalist. And so we had to speak French. We had no choice, okay? That was it. And, of course, you hate it. When you're a little kid, you hate it, and kids laugh at you and this and that. But in those days, we were all in the parochial school system. We all were in the same boat. In other words, speaking French in French class and English in English class. And so you sort of, you know, you just went with the flow, I guess. And in my case, I saw the value of it. And when I got to college, my professor said, hey, why don't you go study in France? And I did. And I was the envy of my fellow American students in Paris, because I had learned French as a native, you know, I was a native speaker.
Right,
and they were having
problems.
So I helped them with their homework. And I could get around here and there. I mean, you just know two languages, and you can go all over the place. And because the maid and the cook in the place where we lived were Spanish, and I heard Spanish, and I said, I can learn that. I came back home, and I learned Spanish. So now I'm trilingual.
Well, and Robert, you know, something you said, you know, it was tough when you were a kid and you fight against it. But as you said, we were all in the same boat. And I think a certain generation in Manchester, growing up in the Catholic schools, going to the French-Canadian Catholic churches, yes, you were all in the same boat. But Yulia said, you know, she's trying to raise her kids to speak Russian. They're not all in the same boat. You know, they're in a complete bath, if I could put it that way, of English. So it's a little tougher, I think, today.
This is a different generation, a completely different generation. In our day, we were told, okay, that French wasn't cool and all this, and kids would laugh. Today, I think, I'm not sure, but I think, you know, you're exotic now. If you speak another language, it's something cool. And I think our son found that out when he went to West High, and the girls who needed help with their homework would go to him, and suddenly, whoa, he got popular. And
Robert,
he saw it then. And, you know, he rebelled when he was a little kid. Today he's thanking us.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling. And, Yulia, I'd love your thoughts there.
No, first of all, I'm extremely jealous of Robert's grandchildren.
Right.
I wish I could adopt him as a grandfather, perhaps, for mine. But, yes, I mean, I think that what he said, I think he said that language learning is a free gift and at some point takes no effort. And I wish it were like that, and I'm glad that was part of his story, not as absolutely as he depicted it, perhaps, because he did mention that as a kid you hate it. But I think it's a very complicated mission to start learning a language, and I think it's important that kids actually realize that it does take effort. It's important for them as they learn it as bilinguals, and it's also important for them as they take up other languages later in college and school, you know, just attending evening classes or whatnot. Language learning is work, even if you're outside school. It requires a mental effort. And I think in families where two partners are speaking the language on a conversational level, it pans out great. It can be wonderful. But languages are also our ways to include people as much as exclude them. And I think if you have a family that's mixed where, you know, one person speaks a language and another one doesn't, and I think the language difficulty plays a role there, and also whether it's a commonly taught language in America or not, that can get quite hairy. So I myself used to be with someone who did not speak Russian, and that created tensions because that person was excluded from our conversations, and that created a strange family dynamic, too.
Yeah,
so I think
tough.
There are a lot of pitfalls there.
Well, outside of families where, you know, at least one person speaks, is a heritage speaker, I think, as you called it, Yulia. Marty Abbott, as you know, the country's politicians, business leaders, educators, everybody's focused on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. That's what we're told everybody needs to study. That's what we're told is the area where America's falling behind. That's what we're told is the key to our prosperity, our future, et cetera, et cetera. Where does foreign language instruction fit into this STEM focus?
Well, our perspective is that it fits in very well because a lot of the immersion programs actually do teach science, but they teach it in the target language or the foreign language. And so we've been working with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy to work languages into their STEM policy to show that students can very effectively combine learning languages with learning STEM subjects and get almost a twofer, you know, actually learn the science but do it in the foreign language. And so we've seen a lot of successful programs do that around the country.
Really? I wonder how that's going, how receptive people really are to that message. It seems to be, the focus seems to be so singular on those subjects that it seems like, anyway, from what you hear and where the money tends to go, that there isn't room for foreign language in this framework.
Well, the government is actually putting some money behind that in the flagship programs at the university level, and students pursue their individual areas of study, and yet they keep up the language proficiency. They study abroad. They do projects in the country where they're learning the language in their area, whether it's political science or science or math or whatever, but they continue learning the language. The University of Rhode Island, for example, has a very successful business major combining either German or Spanish or French, and the students do their internships over in the country, and they come out with knowledge of those STEM subjects, but they're also bilingual in another language, and
okay.
It really sets them on a great path.
So you're not seeing, that's interesting, so you're seeing more integration than maybe first meets the eye.
Yes, exactly.
Or the ear in this instance, right? Well, Yuli, if a teenager came up to you and said, look, I only have so many hours in my high school schedule, and everybody tells me, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM is what I need to do, STEM is what the country needs, why should I take Spanish, given limited time, given the messages that I'm getting, what would you say to that teenager?
Well, why Spanish? Just a quick question.
Or any language, really.
Any language that's taught. Well, first of all, because I think as Marty's already pointed out, or maybe you mentioned that before, that language is open, or maybe Lucy, one of the callers, languages open one's mind. And I think that's important. It's an exercise for the brain. And there are lots of studies that actually show that there are direct correlations between language learning and the expansion of the growth of the brain. And that's very important. And then, of course, I'm always averse to market language as a mere tool, a kind of a career launching tool or a mere business tool. I think languages are a lot more complex than that. But yes, I could tell them, look, if you study Spanish or any other language that's available out there, your future is just so much brighter. You will look so much more different from others. And even that thought does not appeal to you now. That will change soon enough.
So where do you think this is going to end up, Yulia? You know, 10 years from now, will Americans be more multilingual? That seems to be the trend now, given immigration patterns, or less so as people assimilate?
I think it's a difficult question because the assimilation that you bring up, there are studies that confirm that there are fewer Spanish speakers as the Latinos assimilate in this country. But I think whatever the case, the United States needs to articulate a language policy. Many countries in the world have a language policy. That is, how are they going to promote their own language and how is that language going to interact with other languages in the bigger world, because that's where we live. And I think without a language policy, and right now I don't think there is a concerted language policy that's connected to foreign policy, a lot of these things will get stalled.
Okay. Yulia, thank you very much for your time. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Yulia Komska, assistant professor of German studies at Dartmouth College. She recently wrote about the monolingual American for the magazine Pacific Standard. Marty Abbott, it was great to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Marty Abbott, Executive Director of the American Council on Teaching Foreign Languages. This is The Exchange on NHPR, checking in very quickly now with our fall membership drive.